for the following broadcast.
Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, and I'm host Sheldon Brown. We are pre-recording our show on Take It From Us today, and our radio show is brought to you and funded by Ember Wellbeing Trust. Now, I'm going to keep the introduction of my guest today, Sean McNeil, deliberately short, that he is the National Advisor, Consumer Engagement in Mental Health and Addiction for the Health, Quality and Safety Commission. The commission is a crown entity with a national reach, and it began working.
Well, we seem to have a little bit of a confusion here in terms of our program today. Maybe we're back live, but unfortunately, it was programmed for a broadcast that we had broadcast some months ago. But anyway, this is Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us. We're back live in the Planet FM studio, and that's a great feeling, though perhaps somewhat anxiety-provoking too, because it's been 2 months to the day that the Planet FM studio closed due to COVID-19. And thanks to those listeners who've supported us throughout the lockdown and listened to a number of rebroadcasts, probably 8 programs over the last 8 Tuesdays. I'm host Sheldon Brown, and it's great to welcome back technician Declan Curran, who's missed the show so much that he's back. The other great news is that our funder, Ember Wellbeing Trust, has agreed to further funding for Take It From Us, so we'll be around for a while yet. So in the studio today, it's my pleasure to introduce Daryl Bishop, the Group Chief Executive of Ember. So he's a fitting guest to help us celebrate that further funding that was confirmed only last week for Take It From Us, and to talk to Daryl about COVID-19, its impact on Ember, and also on the mental health of Kiwis generally. And I think I'm quite surprised that mental health hasn't grabbed the headlines quite as much as I thought it might do with people in isolation, particularly people with lived experience. So, Daryl, welcome back to Take It From Us.
It's good to be back, Sheldon. Yeah. Nice to see you.
Yeah, well, it's been 2 months, isn't it? I haven't been in the office, but you've been there beavering away.
Yeah, well, we've not quite in the office as much as before COVID, but yeah, most weeks been in the office. I missed your smiling face on a Monday morning.
Oh, well, thank you for that. So the COVID-19 lockdown experience has impacted everyone. For some, it was an easy transition into the safety of their bubble, yet for others, a terrifying proposition. I don't know whether that's a bit extreme. And it came with real challenges. How's Ember coped during the lockdown?
Well, I'd like to think we've coped pretty well as an organisation. I mean, Ember's an essential service, so we never stopped during lockdown. We had to adjust to another normal, a new normal during both Level 4 and Level 3. But we made a decision quite early on that we had to do everything we could to keep our services running for those people who needed it. That meant some change, some prioritisation about who needed service most and how we were going to deliver that without face-to-face and without groups and all the normal mechanisms we had. But I think like most organisations in our sector, we adjusted as quickly as we could and with some prioritisation and use of technology, phones, Zoom, right. Microsoft Teams and things like that, we kept our services running. I mean, I'll probably say this about 5 times in this interview, but my hat goes off to our staff and all of our people and the families who support our Tangata Whaiora, because I think it was a massive effort to make sure that we continue to support people. And I meet regularly with other CEOs and other executives in other organisations, and what we did was replicated across the sector, really. There was a moment where everybody said, right, we need to do what we can do to make sure everybody feels safe and supported during this really tough time. And I think as an organisation, well, I know as an organisation and more broadly as a sector that we did that, and I'm really proud of all our people.
Yes. So one of the major priorities, I guess, from the ministry and the government was to maintain the residential service. Mm. So how did you go about that? Because that must have required face-to-face support.
Yeah, so residential services were a slightly different challenge to the rest of our services. So we were required to maintain all of our services in terms of our mental health and addiction services. But obviously community services, you're supporting people in their own home. So the day-to-day living, they maintain in themselves, and then we're deciding or trying to continue supporting them in some way.
So that sort of service, yeah, wasn't face-to-face. It was...
Well, so some were. So some of our, whatever we needed to do, really. So some of our guys were ringing people up on a level of frequency that was determined by the person receiving the service. Some of our guys were meeting people at the, you know, and walking to the end of their gate and waving and having brief, right, conversations. We were using technology, using Zoom and other forms of technology to meet with people as well. However, as you say, residential services provided a different challenge because the people in Ember's residential services or any residential services are, by their very nature, living with us, our guests or our residents. And so we need to maintain that environment, which means staff and means people going, and it's harder to avoid contact. So we had to reconfigure those services to maintain social distances. We had to provide our staff in those services with equipment and PPE to be able to continue providing the service. So that was a little bit more of a challenge, but we adjusted fine. Right. The DHBs provided us with protective equipment. We purchased some of our own to make sure if the wheels fell off that provision that we still had some. Yeah. And we set up very sort of clear lines of communication to make sure that everybody in the organisation knew where we were. We had some provisions set up should we have staff who get sick, that we need that the other staff could fill those positions within,
right,
so within residential services.
Yeah, and you were offering the opportunity for staff to volunteer.
Yeah, of course.
Any staff, I guess, but...
So we were it was one of those situations where we were asking everybody across Ember that you may need to go and work somewhere different for a while because we need to maintain these services. So we had senior managers working in residential services covering shifts. I was available. I was polishing up my nursing certificate to return to services if need be. I had people from the wider sector contacting me, doctors, nurses, offering support if we needed it. So it was a, you know, all hands on the tiller type situation. And I think that that's what we do, isn't it? That's what Kiwis do, and that's what people in our sector do when things get difficult. Everybody wants to help. So, I was blown away by the kindness, the love, the support that people offered us, and also the strength of will of our staff and all of our people, really. Right. I think that's what got us through.
The team of 5 million.
Yeah, we're part of a team of 5 million, but I was thinking more of the team of a few hundred or 300 of Emberites.
I'm sure you were, yeah. But, I mean, that residential environment, would you describe it as a bit like a hospital?
No, our residential services aren't. I think more thinking of them as like people's homes. So we have a commitment in residential services to support people to live their lives, and just the people who are living with us are getting a bit more support because we're building them up to live independently. Yeah. So now our services, although they're funded by the DHBs, on the whole, they're more like home environments. We think, yeah, of people as residents or guests rather than...
I may have misled you there. I was thinking in terms of the COVID climate, in that staff and tangata whai ora are working together as though, you know, and it had to be treated probably a bit like the hospitals had to treat patients.
Yeah, a little bit. But I guess, Sheldon, that's what we've all been doing. I mean, I think that I was struck by the Prime Minister at the start of this saying you should treat it as if you have COVID and then go out into the world as if you have COVID. That kind of feels like infection control in a hospital for all of us, really. And I think we've all grown up and learnt quite a lot about infections and viruses and how they're transmitted. I think we're all very knowledgeable about that now. And my own house became more like a hospital environment in terms of cleaning surfaces and what we did when we entered it and left it and come back from the supermarket and, right. You know, and all of those sorts of things, hand washing, you know. Yeah. That reminded me of being a nurse and how I was talking to my children about washing their hands was very much like a hospital environment. So I think perhaps that's been for all of us and in our residential services, because of our duty of care and because we're supporting people with their wellness and because we wanted to keep COVID out of those doors, then, yeah, perhaps a little bit more so.
Yeah. How do you think the wellness of Tangata Whaeroa, of people with lived experience, how did they manage? Particularly the Ember people that, you know, our organisation was supporting.
Well, it's a lot of people, and I don't think there's one size fits all. I think different people have coped in different ways. I think for some people, the idea of a pandemic causes great anxiety. And I often say to you, we've had this conversation quite a lot, Sheldon, that the people who receive services from an organisation like Ember are just like everybody else, and they're a cross-section of society. And I think those fears and anxieties that we've all been experiencing, for some people, they were quite blasé and not bothered, and for others, they were really, you know, it amplified and intensified pre-existing worries about the world. So there's no one-size-fits-all, and I think that when we deliver any sort of helping service, generally you're thinking about individuals and tailoring those services, and this was no different, really. I think people have found inner resources or have needed more support, but I, without talking to every single person who receives our services, I can't really answer the question. If you...
No. But I guess during this COVID crisis, which of course continues, you know, we were sort of advised to look after our immunity, the vulnerable, like the aged, like myself, were supposed to stay at home, and I didn't do too much of that because I was protecting my own mental health. But I guess there could be a perception that people with lived experience may be slightly more vulnerable to a virus like this. Do you think there's any truth in that?
Again, we're talking about such a broad population, it's hard to give a generic answer. But, you know, I think some people are more vulnerable. I think if you look around the world, viruses aren't even-handed. They do impact on people with fewer resources in society. So one of the big things about COVID is people with pre-existing conditions, physical conditions, and people who have respiratory conditions are more likely to be impacted. And we know from the equally well statistics that the Tangata Whaeroa that we work with are more likely to have pre-existing sort of heart and physical conditions.
Diabetes.
More likely to smoke. Yeah, all of right. Those things. So I guess logically you could say that, yeah, if the virus was to run rampant through the New Zealand, then many of the people we serve could be more vulnerable.
Right.
However, we nipped it in the bud enough. We didn't really need to test that theory. We haven't seen some of the inequities that we've seen in other countries.
I mean, well, obviously, particularly in the States, where the Anglo-American population, Afro-American population have experienced a greater impact.
Yeah, and in the UK as well, where certain communities seem to be impacted more. So we haven't seen the virus run course through our society, so we haven't seen those inequities sort of amplified. However, we already know those inequities exist for our clients, for our Tangata Whaeroa, because of the equally well statistics, where people using the mental health system are more likely to die earlier than other people. So that's something we were already fighting.
Yeah.
COVID is just another wave, you know, another thing to consider in that battle, really. We were already trying to address those inequities, yeah. and we will continue to do so.
Well, I mean, you mentioned those inequities later in the program. I think we quote somebody from the Mental Health Foundation, one of their researchers or analysts, and she's saying that we're only now going to start seeing the impact of the inequity, the
unemployment, the social deprivation, the lack of housing, all of that sort of thing, and the economic crisis, according to her, is yet to really be felt. So I guess inequity is going to be talked about throughout any sort of recession or drop in economic activity.
Yeah, oh, certainly. And also the trauma of what we've been through, I don't think we'll fully understand it for a long time. If you look at the best example of trauma impacting New Zealand was the Christchurch earthquake. And I know you interviewed Steve Carter a while ago. I don't think we understood the impact of that trauma for many years, you know, in terms of from a mental health point of view. So perhaps we won't understand the impact of what's happened in the last couple of months for a while. That's even before we get into the link between economic disparity and mental health and those sorts of things, which, again, I think we understand, but we don't fully grasp at times.
Yeah, I'd hate to think that the trauma of all that happened in Christchurch, with all the dispute between insurance companies and EQC and the lack of resolution over so many things there. It seems to me that the trauma of that has been much greater than the actual trauma of the earthquakes.
Yeah, and it's often the case. I think recovery, as we know, is not a smooth it's a linear path, you know, it's an up and down thing. So whether that's a society, a community like Christchurch or individuals, it's not a straightforward path at times. So yeah, I think we'll understand. I think we'll be in a slightly better position because of the learnings from Christchurch from a mental health point of view, and you look at the work that went on down there with people like Steve and Kieran from the Mental Health Foundation. I think that helps us understand. I also think that COVID is an unusual thing. I listen to economists talking about the recovery economically, and I think this is not a usual model, economic model to follow. In that, I think a threat of a pandemic and how we recover from it economically and how society recovers from the trauma, we haven't really been here before. Whereas natural disasters, we had some models to work from. This is different. So I think we're all going to be learning.
Yeah, we've had the flu epidemic, which was a major killer, and 1918 or something.
Very different times, though. And if you think about the context of the flu epidemic, I mean, I'm not an epidemiologist. You haven't got me on here to talk about epidemiology, but the flu epidemic was also.
I seem to have achieved that, though.
Yeah, but the flu epidemic was also at the tail end of the Great War.
Right.
So much of the recovery from the flu epidemic economically was also tied into the recovery from the war, and then ultimately going into another war 20 years later. So that's not, it's not really, you know, it's not the same as this. But also, I might be old, but I'm not that old. I can't remember it, Sheldon. You may have memories of it, but not me.
Well, the media's been talking a lot about as a potential model of how we get out of this economically. Well, let's bring Declan in, and I'd like to say again, Declan, it's great to see you.
And you.
Beside the production board at Planet FM here.
I've got to keep you on your toes. Richard Sweet talked to me, and I said, yeah, okay. So
now, Richard being the production manager. Planet FM.
Hey, just before I play this track, I wanted to throw on there, having rheumatoid arthritis, which is an autoimmune condition, and a secondary Sjogren's, which attaches the salivary glands. So that puts me in that high risk because of the suppressed immune system. And my GP said to me, oh, you probably should wear a mask. And I says to her, yeah, but they say the masks actually make it harder to breathe. I said, what do you want me to do, breathe out of a straw or something? So, but it's good, we can have a good laugh. But I just thought I'd throw that in there anyway. And the song I've got for you is probably quite a good one today. It's from a group called Blue, and it's called If You Come Back, which we're all back after this COVID. We've come through it quite well. Sold over 1 million singles worldwide, this one, and it topped the UK charts for 1 week, only a week, so I don't know what happened there. But anyway, you're listening to Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting live here every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30 on 104.6 Planet FM, and here's Blue, If You Come Back.
Time.
And that track actually peaked at number 5 on the New Zealand charts back in 2001, so it did pretty well, I think.
Yeah, well, it's Blue, If You Come Back. I'm not sure that I'm familiar with that particular band, but I'm host Sheldon Brown on Mental Health Radio. Take It From Us. We're talking today to Daryl Bishop, the Chief Executive of Ember Group, and we have confirmed that part of the group, Ember Wellbeing Trust, has agreed to further funding for Take It From Us. That's going to continue right through for a couple of years. So thank you very much to Ember Wellbeing Trust for its ongoing support for Mental Health Radio. If we could talk personally, Daryl, you've just accused me of stalking you on Facebook, but I am a member of the Three Good Things or the Happiness Experiment, and you've been listing some of the things that you're grateful for during the lockdown. What are some of those?
Practice gratitude in terms of gratitude journals for quite a long time. So when a friend of mine, Tamara Waugh, started the happiness experiment, I happily joined in, and it's been really useful during COVID. So it's something I've done before, but I found it really useful during this period to just reflect each day on things that you're grateful for, and to have just write some simple things down that you're really happy about, because I think in stressful times that can really help. And it sometimes takes you to the mundane, but makes you realise that you're quite happy for some of the mundanity in your life. So I'm not saying my wife and children are mundane, but you know, you get my point. So my dog comes up a lot. My wife obviously comes up a lot. My children and spending time with them has been a part of my journal. But then simple things like I enjoy cooking. I like listening to music. So those things, just acknowledging how grateful I am for those things in my life, I think is a helpful thing at any time. But during the stresses of recent weeks has been particularly helpful. I've also, I have to say, enjoyed reading other people's. And I enjoy reading the things, the simple things that we all seem to be grateful for, because I think sometimes we forget the simple things that we're grateful for. We aspire for lots of other things and we forget that the basics of life, first and foremost, not everybody has them. So, you know, relationships, a roof over your head, food in your belly, we need to be grateful for those things because they're not universally held by not everybody in the world has the gift of those things.
Well, our health as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that I think being able to get out and walk and enjoy the benefits of walking and having the discipline of, as part of my routine to get through COVID, walking was one of the highlights. And the weather has been so good that I can get out on Tamaki Drive and enjoy the tide being in and the clear water and some of the girls walking around the walking around the drive.
Because you play tennis, don't you? So you,
yeah, but I haven't been, able to play tennis. So I think it's tennis has made a comeback last week, I think Thursday. But we were introduced to virtual bridge because I'm a bridge player, and so I was able to stay at home, play virtual bridge, and actually play against people from Sweden and America and all over, you know. So it was quite an international community.
I hope you booted booty on board when you were playing it, you know. Kicked a few people in the...
I was going to say, though, Sheldon, that the dog is quite an interesting one because, of course, you know, pets... There is good evidence that pets provide you with calm and relaxation, and stroking a pet lengthens your life. But also, having a dog look at you needing a walk means you have to exercise. If I don't exercise the dog and don't take the dog for a walk, she whines and looks at me all longingly. So there's a reason to exercise, I think, is really good as well. So I've really, really appreciated the dog more than ever in recent times.
Yeah. And also, I guess you would be very grateful for the cooperation, the support of Ember staff.
Yeah.
Certainly in your, 2 daily, 3 daily reports as to what was going on. You've been very, very appreciative of the sort of support and community and team.
Well, other organisations also have wonderful staff, I should qualify, but as a group of people, Ember staff are amazing, and I knew that before COVID. All I've experienced in the last 8 weeks is generosity, kindness, people willing to help, people offering support, people working hours beyond their normal hours, people working in environments that they're not familiar with, managers who wanted to do absolutely anything that they could do to continue providing services and ensuring people felt supported. So, yeah, I'm not surprised. Ember has a culture of kindness and a culture of generosity of spirit, so I'm not surprised that people acted like that. But of course, I think it's really important to acknowledge and to say, and certainly as a leader, it's important to communicate it. So, yeah, you say twice a day. I am quite big on communication. I do think it's important that we talk to each other and we let people know what's going on. So, yeah, I'm sorry if it was a bit too much as a staff member. But.
No, I don't think so at all. I think it kept us in touch while we were working from home. But, you know, our Prime Minister has talked a lot about kindness and compassion and that sort of thing.
Well, she's always imitated me. I mean, it's a problem. The problem that we have.
Yes. Well, her popularity has gone through the roof. It looks as though the Labor Party could govern on their own, according to the latest poll last night. Are there things that you've reviewed personally while you've been in lockdown?
But apart from the sort of practicing gratitude and getting back to doing that, I think for me it's made me very mindful of how I organise my time, and I think for many people that would be the case in terms of prioritising where I put my energies and where I put my time. I haven't missed commuting. I spend a lot of time in my car, so not sitting in my car for 10 to 15 hours a week has given me more time. So it's allowed me to be quite considered and careful and thinking about how I use my time. I don't necessarily naturally work well from home. I like people. I like being around people. I like the ideas that conversation generates. So I've had to sort of retrain myself a little bit to have that discipline to make sure that I use meetings well and to use the Zoom, the Microsoft Teams software well and to structure those meetings well. I think I've learned a lot about that. I'm probably not unlike lots of other people in terms of making sure the technology works for me now and making sure that we use time wisely. So, yeah, I've changed my office setup at home because the first week I ended up with a sore neck from sitting in an uncomfortable position because it wasn't like my office at work. So, yeah, all those sorts of things have been learnings. Yeah. I think we can work smarter would be my biggest learning. I think this has shown us that we perhaps don't work in the smartest, most efficient way, and perhaps we can do that a bit better. Exactly what that means, I'm not sure yet, but I think as a team and as an organisation, we're going to look at how we can take the things that we've done that have made us more efficient and better and keep those things even post-COVID and make the organisation a bit more efficient and smarter.
I mean, it looks as though many employers will be taking a more flexible attitude towards employees being there at 8:30 and leaving at 5. You know, there'll be a mix of being in the office and being at home, and maybe the solution for you is to travel at a different time so that you can get out of that congestion.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I remember in our organisation there are some people who, you know, work shifts and work in residences, so they don't get that luxury of flexing their time. But I think for some staff, but I think, Sheldon, I think Ember, like lots of organisations, has always been reasonably flexible on that sort of stuff. We have usually an agreement with most of our staff around what it is they're employed to do. And for those working in residences or communities, it's normally based on the amount of support they provide to people, whether they're community staff or residential staff. And those people working in business support, it's on agreed outcomes, and those things are more important than checking in at 7 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, but yeah. Like I say, for our residential staff, they still have a period of time that they're working, so that hasn't changed.
No. I mean, yesterday at Ember, it sent out a very helpful statement, I thought, about knowing the facts, keeping things in perspective and acknowledging our feelings, especially at a time when we are going back to work, kids are going back to school, and there was a lot of talk on news channels about the anxiety that provoked and getting back out in the community. How important do you think these tips are, the acknowledging our feelings, keeping things in perspective?
Well, I think the knowing the facts and having sources of information you can trust is really important. I think there's a lot of misinformation around. There's a lot of confusion. So I think one of the things that New Zealand's done well, right down from the Prime Minister all the way through, is to be really clear about what's actually going on. And so I think that is something that we need to continue. Look, I would imagine for where Ember's different is we haven't stopped working. Some people have been working from home, but we've carried on delivering our organisation's services. But I would imagine for a lot of people yesterday, going back to work, it was a bit weird and a bit strange and a bit surreal, having either not been working or been working from home for the last sort of 7 weeks. I could imagine that was quite strange for people. I think
even getting in the car and driving again,
you know? Sitting in a traffic jam.
Yeah.
People were not very good at driving. There was some talk about that on the television, that you kind of forget how to drive quite quickly. So that was quite a... I think people in Auckland can't drive anyway, so I don't know what they've forgotten. but you know, I think it would feel quite strange for people, the routine changing back, and whether it be about time or be about the environment you work in, be about having to put your shirt and trousers back on rather than your pyjama bottoms, all those sorts of things would feel a bit weird. And also, we're not back to normal. We're still under a... It is still alert level 2. We're still expecting people to practice social distancing. We're still expecting people to practice a higher level of hygiene. We are still not meeting more than 10 people. We're still not providing our full group program face-to-face. So it's not back to normal yet. I'm not a big fan of this phrase, new normal, but there's a sense that we are still operating in a time of crisis. It's just that it's better than it was 2 weeks ago.
Right. Okay, well, let's bring Declan back in again.
Yes, I'm hovering here on the fence. I am looking silly.
Hovering, no. wanting to play another music track.
Indeed. Well, I've got one for you here, actually. I remember we were talking one time about having a mix of male and female, so I brought two of them in here now. It's a duet. One of my favourite organisations, what should I say, groups is better, Train. This song here, it's about two classmates who meet up 10 years later. They share their hard life lessons along the way, and Pat Monahan shares the vocals with Ashley Moore. And the song was re-recorded in both English and French for its Canadian single release. There you go. You're listening to Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting here every single Tuesday live from 12:30 through to 1:30 on 104.6 Planet FM.
See, you're still beautiful. Gravity hasn't started to pull quite yet. I bet you're rich as hell. One that's five and one that's three. Been 2 years since he left me. Good to know.
Give us something again, Declan.
You've forgotten, didn't you? It's Bruises. It's by Train, and it features Ashley Monroe.
Great. Well, I'm host of Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, Sheldon Brown. We're talking today to Daryl Bishop, who's the... I should have this title correct. I'm not sure that I wrote it down correctly, Daryl. You are the group chief executive of Ember Group.
Yeah, that's right. So Ember Group... So I report to Ember Wellbeing Trust, and then the subsidiary organisations are Ember Services Limited, which you're part of, Ember Innovations, which is our innovation company set up to sort of do innovative new projects over the next few years, and also sort of engage in social enterprise and that sort of stuff. And then Ember Housing, which is a small organisation we have to manage some of our housing interests. So I'm the group CEO of those organisations. I think it's just a convenient way of making me do several jobs.
How long has Ember been in existence now?
So I took the role 18 months ago, but we launched Ember as a group on July the 1st, 2019. So quickly time goes by. We had the big launch event about this time last year, and then we officially launched on July the 1st. But we've been having the conversation for about two years now, since we first started talking about bringing together what was Connect, Support and Recovery and Framework Trust. And really, it's just been about doing it since then, since we started on the process.
So, what's your assessment of the merger?
Well, it's been great. I mean, I'm delighted how well it's gone and what we've created. I'm not surprised, because the reason we did it in the first place was because the organisations had similar values. So, most of the issues, most of the day-to-day problems that you're trying to address are easy to overcome because people are on the same team and trying to achieve the same things. I think it's helped us think a little bit bigger and think about how we can solve perhaps some of the problems we see in the system and in the sector, and allows us to have a bit of a bigger voice. And it also has allowed us to combine resources. And as a bigger organisation, what we're aiming to do is provide more support to our people, our staff and our Tangata Whaiora and their families, so that we're better, really. Not to say that Connect and Framework weren't fabulous, because they were, but this allows us, in this sense, a little bit bigger is a bit better, and allows us to be more resourceful, have more better systems to support people, and allow us to grow the organisation and grow our voice. So far, that's been really, really good and really successful. However, it's relatively early days. When you consider that Framework and Connect were around for 30 years and we're only 1 year in, I think we'll hold judgment.
I can remember first coming into contact when it was, AMHS?
Yeah, that's right, AMHS on the shore.
They were down the bottom of Forest Hill Road, and I was working in, working with them in Edge Employment.
Yeah, very interestingly, because when we came into the merger, both Connect and Framework had employment companies. We're looking to, because we've obviously brought those together, over the coming months we're going to be doing some work to relaunch those as a new brand, as Ember Employment. That's a
work focus.
Work focus and Edge have kind of crunched together as part of the merger, and we're going to look to do an energetic rebrand of those.
It's a very valuable service, I found too, because they're taking you to employers that you've got listed on your books who are aware of the situation, so you're not going in cold with that dilemma of, do I tell this organisation I've got the condition now, or do I wait until something flips out and then why didn't you tell us before? So it's good to know that you're going for interviews with organisations that are prepared to work to get you into work, because they know the situation.
With people with lived experience.
Yep.
I mean, it's almost as though you don't have to disclose, the person doesn't have to disclose, because they are being represented by an employment consultant who clearly comes from a mental health background.
The reason employment support's so important to us and important to me is that as an organisation, and me personally and all the people that work in our organisation, we're interested in real outcomes. So we're interested in helping people with lived experience rebuild those really important things like daily living skills in residential settings, but also things like work, relationships, you know, those education, those sorts of things we think are what being successfully living your life is about. You know, if your relationships and your employment and your living where you live is working. Back to sort of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, if those things are taken care of, then you're doing okay. And so we're very interested in those things, as opposed to focusing too much on diagnosis and you know, the sort of medical side of stuff, which we are, obviously, we care for people with diagnosis and we care for people who are taking medication, and we are very mindful of supporting people with that. But our real passion and interest is those sort of real life outcomes and those real life things that are important to all of us.
I mean, it strikes me that in that area of employment consultancy, there is a clear measure of success, because you place people in work, you support them. I think Ember supports them for, what, at least 6 months in that work.
Yeah.
And if they stay in that job, well, you can sort of tick it off and say, well, that's been a success. Are there other areas of Ember's mental health services where it's as clear-cut as that in terms of how you'd measure the success of the service?
I would say when you find somewhere to live, I'd say that's quite a measure of success. When you help somebody achieve an educational qualification or something, I like to think of these things as catalysts, though Sheldon, that's just my personal way of thinking about these things. If you think about when you get a job or you attain a qualification or you find yourself a good flat to live in, or a good rental agreement, or you connect with some good flatties, these things lead to other positive things in your life. And I think when we all think about our lives, we can remember times when things started to improve, and it's often around a catalyst event, you know, the start of a friendship, the beginning of a job, the attaining of a qualification, when I moved into that house. And I think that's what we're about. I mean, the name Ember comes from this idea that at times some people see the flames flickering low and going out, but we don't see it like that. We see that as an opportunity to rebuild fires. And I think things like jobs, houses, relationships, those sorts of things are attainable steps along the way to that big fire.
Can I just dive in there and just say, from a positive perspective, I was lucky enough to be able to go and stay with my parents for a month or so until I was able to be unleashed on my own. When somebody comes out of a ward and they've got, you know, the flatmates may have said, oh, you know, spooked, or they haven't got somewhere to go, how are you able to help them in that process so that they don't have that extra fear of, I'm going to get out and where am I going to live?
I think, you know, different people, Declan. I mean, as I've said, it depends on the person. So for some people, that might be that we are where they live for a while, and we support people to build up their confidence and their skill to independently live. Other people, it might be support with the finding a place.
Right.
Or the support with the relationships that follow on from a new placement. So it depends on the person. Sometimes it might just be a peer support relationship, just as a chance to reflect and talk and do what you just did, share your experience so that you realise that you're not going through something totally unique.
I was just thinking, you know, for me it was the comfort of knowing that I could hand over the keys, the phone, the wallet and that, and have that 3 weeks of still going, you know, quite sort of elevated mood. But I always wondered how someone would go coming out, whether that could add extra stress to them going, my God, where am I going to go to? But it's good to know that you've got that support there so that people don't feel they're sort of dropped into the water, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think our guys, I mean, Sheldon, I'll tell you, our guys are incredibly skilled and experienced at having those conversations, whatever perspective they bring, whether it's a community support or an employment support or a peer support perspective. They're incredibly skilled at gently helping people recover those things themselves, because at the end of the day, that's your recovery is your recovery. It's not it's not the worker's recovery. Yeah,
I guess my catalyst going back to 2006 was being in the bone carving school that Framework used to run at Kingsland. This attractive woman walked in and was moving around the bone carving school, and I introduced myself. She said, I'm the CEO. And I said, what are you doing about marketing? And she said, well, we're not doing anything at all, but it's top of mind. And I said, well, I may be able to help you out. And within a week, I was the consumer marketing and promotions leader of Framework. So, you know, just getting out there, being out there and putting yourself about, I suppose, at a time when my mental health and my whole career direction was in tatters,
well,
that was good, though,
the opportunity arose.
Because you'd been from a journalist background anyway, hadn't you, with the Star and that sort of thing. So you're bringing all those skills.
Oh, well, I had the background. I'd been a public relations consultant, but that career had come to an end. I'd realised that I wasn't going to go back to that. So.
Well, what a fantastic opportunity, and what a fantastic opportune meeting with somebody in those circumstances. I mean, call it luck, call it fate.
Karma, right?
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. It's great that you took that opportunity. So,
it
and you're still with us.
I'm very, very grateful. We've been talking about gratitude, but I mean, it changed the direction of my career, gave me the great opportunity to build up some expertise in mental health, and then the opportunity of the radio show came along through Like Minds, and that's where you and I, Daryl, first met. So
feels like a long time ago, doesn't it? I was going to say, it was not long after that I met you, Sheldon, when you were working on Like Minds with the framework Like Minds Service. And doing the radio show and doing Like Minds work. Yeah. So feels like a long time ago. Before my children... Oh, no, I had a baby, but before my daughter was born, so...
Well, it's probably 13 years ago. 12 years ago.
Wow.
Young men we were.
Yeah, let's take another music break, Declan.
I've got one I want to give you a little bit more of a background on before I play it. It's quite an interesting little one. It's from a guy who's a Hawaiian singer and songwriter, and... this one in 2010 hit the UK and US charts at number one. And it's about a song, it's called Grenade by Bruno Mars. And he talks about all these things that he wants to do, that he'd throw himself in front of this and that for this girl. But it's because he's desperate to impress a hard-to-please girlfriend. And some people thought that when he was towing the piano in the video, that it was all sort of put on through a stage thing, but he was actually literally pulling this thing through the streets of LA. When it climbed to number one, he became the first male act in 13 years to take his first two charting singles as a lead artist to the summit of the Billboard Hot 100. But here's the interesting thing that I thought was quite clever. Well, probably disturbing for them. After the song became a hit at live concerts, the audience were throwing fake grenades. And he said that was fine initially. It was a bit disturbing because it was, he said it was cute now, but he said it was beginning to spook the band out with stage lights on. You can't see anything. He said it's dangerous and it scares the crap out of me, basically. So I thought that was good. So, here is Bruno Mars with Grenade. You're on Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting every Tuesday on 104.6 Planet FM between 12:30 and 1:30.
Easy come, easy go, that's just how you live. Oh, take, take, take it all, but you never give. Should've known you was trouble from the first kiss. Had your eyes wide open, why were they open? Gave you all I had and you tossed it in the trash. You tossed it in the trash, you did. A grenade for ya. Throw my hand on a blade for ya. I jump in front of a train for ya. You know I'd do anything for ya. Oh, oh, I would go through all this pain. Take a bullet straight through my brain. Yes, I would die for you, baby. But you won't. Do the same. No, 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 no. Black, black, black and blue. Beat me till I'm numb. Tell the devil I said, hey, when you get back to where you're from. Mad woman, bad woman, that's just what you are. Yeah, you'll smile in my face, then rip the brakes out my car. Gave you all I had and you tossed it in the trash. You tossed it in the trash, yes you did. To give me all your love is all I ever ask. Cause what you don't understand is I'd catch a grenade. Oh,
Well, we're back live. I'm host Sheldon Brown on Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us. We've been talking to Daryl Bishop about, well, the challenges of the COVID-19, the lockdown, and the way that Ember has responded and diversified its services to meet the special requirements of the virus. I'll say thank you to Daryl in just a little time, but there are a number of important things happening in mental health. One is the Fiora Fitiora Fund, which is granting up to $200,000 worth of COVID-19 grants, and these have to be applied for by May 28. This is through the Mental Health Foundation, and these grants have been created to help charitable organisations and community groups help Tangata Whaiora, or those of us who live with mental health and addictions challenges, to get through the COVID-19 together. So I think each one of these grants is worth up to $20,000 from this total pool of $200,000. You can get in touch with Gina Giordani, that's Giordani, at fitiorafund@mentalhealth.org.nz, or I'm sure that you could just go to www.mentalhealth.org.nz, which is, of course, the website of the Mental Health Foundation. So look out for those Fiora Fitiora Fund grants. They close on May the 28th.
I've got your music.
You've got some music in behind there.
Pop back in.
The other thing that I was asked to communicate today was the changes that Hearts and Minds have been operating. They are offering free online support groups to boost our mental well-being. These groups are designed to manage anxiety in times of stress, to build self-esteem during challenging times, and to operate and practice mindfulness and stress management. There's also free phone counselling. You can connect with caring professionals, get support through a phone call. So this is one-to-one support with a qualified counsellor, tips and tools for managing anxiety and stress, and there is confidential personalised support. Hearts and Minds, which is based in Northcote and services the North Shore, is also offering a mental wellbeing support for the Chinese community. This is an online group in Mandarin or in English to support mental wellbeing. It's in partnership with the Asian Family Services, and it's called the Living Well Group. It's facilitated by a Rebecca Zhang at the Asian Family Services, and it starts on Monday the 25th of May, which will be next Monday between 10:30 and 11:30. So I suggest that you get in touch with heartsandminds.org.nz. The actual email address is learning@heartsandminds.org.nz. So they're our community notices, both from the Mental Health Foundation and Hearts and Minds. Daryl, have you got any particular announcements from Ember at all?
No, I don't think. You've caught me on the hop there. No, I haven't brought any announcements for me. Sorry, Sheldon.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your contribution to our first live broadcast after 2 months.
Well, it's my pleasure, and congratulations on the funding.
Yeah,
it was a no-brainer from the trust point of view.
Oh, well, that's lovely of you to say that, and it's a big boost to me personally. Yeah, well, thank you.
On our way
great
out.
Great to have Declan.
Good to be back.
Yeah, that's great.
Catch you next week.
Okay, then.
Bye-bye. Bye.